Hard Place, a novel by R.A. Jacobson. Listener discretion is advised. Contains strong language, violence, and some adult situations.
Chapter 36. A Waste. He walked alone down a dirt road on a quiet, moonless night. He came to a sign he could not read. It pointed back the way he had come. The sound of a twig snapping made him whirl to see a tall, thin man in a dark suit step from the shadows. He walked with an easy stride, a gray, one-eyed dog at his side. The stranger sidled up to John, leaned forward, and whispered in his ear. "My friend," he began in a voice carried on oiled wings, "you are a failure. Your words have no power. They hold no magic. They are not special. They reach no one. Dust on your lips, dull thud as they fall. A waste of your words, a waste of those songs. Your fingers, a waste. Your faulty tuning, a waste. The ghosts in the sound hole, wasted. Hours of repeating those lines, those songs like smearing grease on a window. Nothing clears. All a waste of time. You have wasted your life. Each breath you took, a waste. For all the good you did, all the passion you poured into your music, you might as well have been serving the beer your audience had to drink. For all the magic you believed you poured into the world, it was nothing more than the beer on its brief trip to becoming piss."
Chapter 37. A Running Dog. It had been years since Jacob had driven Clyde, and he wasn't happy about driving him now. His hatred had turned into a hard thing, a rock in his heart he couldn't put down. Clyde was always there to remind him of his mistake, his deal. The deal that had cost him everything, and cost Mary Lou her life. When he saw Clyde, when he heard his voice in his head, his mind raced back to that horrific night. His hatred for Clyde, for himself, rose and threatened to overwhelm him. He would have to put all that aside. Whatever was going on now had something to do with the judge. With Skins back, it would be good to have Clyde's insight. It would prove invaluable. He was a demon, after all. Clyde knew to stay quiet as they rolled down Highway 11 past the Old Scratch Tavern. About a half an hour further down the road, they turned right and headed north on 68. Brian sat looking out the passing fields. He hadn't said a word since leaving the farm. Anne had been special to him. Jacob wasn't sure how Brian's deal would work with this kind of pain. His contract healed him quickly, but this might take longer to mend than any physical injury. They crested the hill and stopped. The dust they had kicked up caught up to them and blew past. Brian rolled down his window and looked out across the field at Billy's farm. They had been right. The place was crawling with cops. Several cruisers with red lights flashing surrounded the trailer. Officers in white overalls were taking pictures and doing cop stuff. They were setting up bright work lights. It looked like they were planning to investigate into the night. The garage door was open. Jacob could see the two cop cars the Skins had driven. At least Norm had done what he had asked. He chuckled, thinking how confused the police would be. It would take time for them to realize the evidence would lead nowhere and admit they could not solve this case. They had two cop cars hidden in a garage with four dead cops in the back seats, one dead man, one dead dog in the trailer, and all were skinned. It was a hard puzzle to piece together. They would be motivated to keep searching because four of them had been killed, but it wouldn't help. Brian looked at Jacob, eyebrows raised, to say, "I told you." There was no way they were going to get close to Billy's trailer and poke around, at least not for some time. "Well, shit, that's not good." Jacob pushed his hat back on his head. Told ya. What are you going to do now?
Dunno.
I'm all for going to the judges and beating him till he gets some answers, or not. I'd be happy just to beat on him. Yeah, you know that wouldn't do no good. A gust of wind brought through the windows the smell of wet earth mixed with the scent of rot. Not the clean, hopeful smell of decaying plants, but the putrid stench of festering meat. Out across the field, Jacob saw something moving. Looked like a coyote or maybe a mangy dog running flat out. It stumbled but kept running.
Shit, ain't that Billy's dog?
He asked as it got closer. Brian peered out across the field where Jacob was pointing.
Think so? Don't look too good.
The dog fell, panting for a minute, its tongue lolled, then it stood unsteadily and ran on.
It's got to be a skin wearing Boozer, Jacob said.
Clyde's windshield turned black, then lightened again. The world shifted slightly as Clyde reopened his eyes.
A skin?
Yeah, I see it, but he's weak, he said.
They drove, pacing the dog. It ran, head down, sniffing, but it wasn't doing too well.
He looks like he's searching for something.
Must have been since Billy was killed, Jacob said. The dog fell again. It took longer to get up, but it continued. Clyde, how long can a skin wear a body? Jacob asked.
A human skin, 3 days tops.
Once the skin rots enough to let the air in, the demon inside is done. When its real skin touches air, he'll burn. You know, oxygen and fire bad. But a dog skin may be made of tougher stuff.
I saw Billy's dog skin 4 days ago, Jacob said.
Oh, that's a long time for a skin for sure, Clyde said.
We're close to Billy's folks' farm, Brian said. He glanced at Jacob like a guilty child that had said something he shouldn't. Jacob looked down the road and noticed where they were.
Now that's interesting. They're not around anymore.
Nah, they passed a couple years ago. The farm's abandoned.
Let's head over there and poke around.
In the field, the dog collapsed with a scream that was not a sound any dog could make. Dark smoke with teeth burst from its back and disappeared, leaving a dark stain on the ground.
That's it, Jacob said.
They drove on. After a few minutes, Brian pointed to an obscured approach.
Turn here, he said.
Through a break in the stand of trees, they entered the abandoned farmyard, overgrown with grass and weeds.
Chapter 38, That Dark Road. The thin man circled John. You are a failure. You wanted to make me cry, and in a way you did. I heard your flailing, artless and devoid of magic. It was painful to listen to you torture that poor guitar. So I delivered you another, a better, a deeper one. I gave you my guitar. What are you willing to trade? How badly do you want those songs? How badly do you want the sound? John stood up. In his left hand he held his new guitar, his scarred beauty, burnished in blood and lightning. It hummed. It was on the threshold of a song. He looked at it and thought it was the most beautiful thing he'd ever seen. It was certainly the most beautiful thing he'd ever called his own. On a dark road, at a lonely crossroads, on a moonless night, to a tall, strange man with a one-eyed dog as witness, he answered, anything.
Chapter 39. Alan Leaves a Coin. Alan crashed through the back door into the alley, writhing in pain. He stumbled, his fingers clawed at his skin.
Alan, stop! Matt called.
It's so hot! I'm on fire! I am of the furnace below!
What are you saying, Alan? You're not making sense!
I cannot be here! It burns!
Dark coils swam around Alan's blistering body.
Matt, I failed! You must do it! Take it to Mr. White! It's the only way!
Alan screamed, his arms flung wide, his back bent impossibly until it cracked. The scream changed into a feral howl. His body split, his chest tore open, revealing smoldering embers. Fissures of fiery orange raced along his limbs and glowed through his clothing.
Alan!
Matt screamed. From the gash in his chest sprang a massive creature of black smoke. Fangs bared, eyes wide, it glared at Matt as it rose into the air. Its unearthly howl faded as the smoke dissipated. Matt cast about looking for Alan. He was gone. On the ground was a pile of scorched clothes, blood splattered and covered in ash. But there was no body. A glint caught Matt's eye. He knelt and brushed away the ash. It was a silver coin, tarnished and nearly black with age. The sound of someone softly clearing their throat startled him. He rose and turned, slipping the coin into his pocket. At the entrance of the alley stood the silhouettes of two thin men with large hats. They reminded him of the men he had seen outside of his office a few days ago. In unison, they moved forward into the light. Their steps were disjointed and unsettling.
"Mr. Pierce," one asked, smiling.
"Who are you?"
"My name is Mr. August, and this is Mr. December. Good evening, Mr. Pierce. Head office has sent us to speak to Mr. Cole. However, it does appear we're too late. It is our understanding that you were his partner, were you not?" asked Mr. December.
Yeah, I am. I was. Yes.
Wait, who did you say you are? Mr. December?
Yes, sir, that is correct.
Would you be amiable to answering a few questions we were proposing to put to Mr. Cole?
Questions?
Who did you say you're with? Matt asked. We are from head office. We only have a few questions. Mr. December, I don't believe he'll have the answers we seek. He's not marked, said Mr. August. Not marked. What a shame. It would have been so much easier. Mr. Pierce, perhaps you'd be interested in a contract? We could offer you anything you want, and because of the unusual circumstances, we could offer you a non-standard contract, Mr. December said.
Non-standard?
What are you talking about? Matt asked. Mr. December is referring to the deviation from our standard contract of 6 years, 6 months, and 6 days, the standard 666. As a signatory of a non-standard, you would not be subject to those time restraints. All other clauses would, of course, apply, Mr. August said.
No, I don't think so.
Right now, all I want to know is what happened to Alan, Matt frowned. That would do. How badly do you want to know? Asked Mr. December.
I want to know,
Matt said, unsure of exactly what was going on. That's fantastic. I'm sure the judge would be delighted to sign you.
Sign me?
I'm not signing anything. Matt felt a rising panic. That's a shame, but not unexpected. If you change your mind, give me a call. My card. Mr. December pulled a card from his breast pocket and offered it. Matt took the weighty black card with some hesitation. In its raised gold letters, it read, Mr. December, and nothing else. No number, no address, no info at all. When he looked up, the two men were gone. The alley was empty except for a thick cloud of black flies. Revolted, he flinched back and waved his hands as they dropped. Hundreds of dead and dying flies littered the ground. They crunched under his shoes. Horrified by the sight and disgusted by the incessant buzzing, Matt looked down the dark lane. His bizarre conversation with Alan had given him no actual answers. It was obvious there was far more going on. The only thing he was convinced of was that his friend was gone, leaving behind more puzzling questions and a pile of scorched clothes.
chapter 40, witness his becoming. John stepped into old Tom's back room on a hot, muggy Wednesday, put his name down on the list, and ordered a beer, not noticing when it was placed in front of him. The room began to fill, hushed conversations as names were placed on the list and guitars were leaned against the back wall. John kept his treasure close, between his legs under the table. He spoke softly as he stroked the magnificent scarred body. He felt it hum, listened to its promise, felt its mojo, a river's song, laced with toothy old men's smiles and young woman's fullness, and the thick, coiling humidity of the Delta. He couldn't remember ever being this nervous. He realized it was not fear, but excitement mixed with anticipation. He imagined comments of awe, admiration for his guitar, his sound. Tonight would be different. He could feel it. He looked at the crowd filling the room and saw the faces looking at him. He was sure they could feel how special the night was. In his chest, a conjurer's drum beat. In his ears, a witch's muttering. He felt magic swirl, a snake's heavy body around all who were there. An unplayed note dropped in everyone's ear. Each coming chord is an unplanted field, a promise. Each note, each word to come, a seed. He looked at them all out there and oddly envied them. They would be the first to witness his becoming.
Stories from a Hard Place is a narrative podcast. Every Tuesday and Thursday, R.A. Jacobson presents another chapter from Hard Place, read by the author. Opening music by Noah Zachrin. Production copyright by R.A. Jacobson, 2022. If you'd like to support Stories from a Hard Place, please go to patreon.com/hardplace. If you would like a book version, either ebook or print, you can find it anywhere books are sold, including your local library. You can find links to all these and much more at Dead Cat Studio. That's deadcatstud.io. Thanks for listening. Keep the shiny side up.